So there was Michael, Senior Research Fellow at the New Zealand Initiative and a member of the Curriculum Coherence Group, talking to the audience about why boys fare worse than girls in literacy.
And at some point I talked about some literacy data, because that is a relevant issue for boys. They're well behind girls at every stage in reading and especially writing. So I mentioned those data. And I think I made a comment about the data about the phonics check that were out a couple of weeks ago, showing a really good lift over the first couple of terms in the proportions of kids after 20 weeks at school who knew their phonics. And somebody in the audience, who I won't name, but a prominent academic, made a rude interjection, I would say, at that point. And we had a brief exchange, and then I moved on with my talk.
But he wasn't the only one, I understand. There was a bit of booing and heckling.
I think that's an exaggeration. I would say that the audience was mixed in its response. I wasn't expecting a warm reception from that audience because of the political character of that organisation. But as I say, I was there to try to build some bridges. And I think, to be fair, after the talk, I had some really good conversations with people, and there were people who were open to that. But there were also elements in that audience who were probably always going to do that.
But does it also show the level of, I guess, passion around this topic, the new curriculum, the draft curriculum?
There's no doubt that there is a strong degree of passion there, yes. But, I mean, passion is not the same thing as reason.
Does it put you off wanting to speak in public? I mean, because you could also argue that your stance is not necessarily representative of what teachers want from education.
What's your basis for saying
well,
that?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, I mean, you're with the New Zealand Initiative, which is, what is it fair to say, it's a right-wing think tank?
No, I think it's what we are is, I would say we're a classical liberal think tank. We give policy advice to any political party who wants to talk to us. You know, Chris Hipkins spoke at our members' retreat earlier this year. So it's not true that we only talk to the right-wing parties. We're willing to talk to all parties. And besides which, my work is on education. And I lament the fact that that is being used as a political football. It shouldn't be. So people can get distracted by the organisation I work for. They can get distracted by all sorts of things. But I just try to stay squarely focused on my best reading of the evidence and the policy that that evidence would suggest will help lift educational achievement in our country. And I might say close equity gaps, because, you know, if you want to see Māori do better, if you want to see kids in the high equity schools do better, then following the evidence-based practice is even more important for them than it is for anyone.
It's about our kids. Have a look at the content. Kids are going to be learning world history, like the Stone Age, kings and queens, the Egyptians, dynasties and revolutions. Amazing new content and material they should be learning. And that's what we should be focusing on. Not who wrote it and whose ego is a bit bruised, but what are our kids learning?
That's just a reminder from the Minister about what the curriculum shake-up is all about. Back to Michael now on A Better Line, explaining his role in it.
For the last 18 months or so, I've been part of the Curriculum Coherence Group, which is a Ministry of Education convened panel of people, and our job has been principally a review role. We look at the documents that the writers produce and comment on them from the point of view of knowledge-rich curriculum design, mostly.
Erica Stanford, the Minister, said in interviews that hundreds of people have been involved in this, I guess, redesign of the curriculum. So does it come to your group last?
It's hard to know what happens last, but we've seen various drafts of all the learning areas over time. So we don't sign it off, but we make comments and ask questions and so on.
Can you just be a little bit more specific? So it comes to the coherence group, and then what you review what has been recommended in this.
We see drafts of each learning area, and as I say, make comments on the design of it. So we're looking for a particular design of the way in which the knowledge and the practices fit together. For example, we have a look at the sequencing to make sure that it looks logical and makes sense. We've given some thought to connections between learning areas, especially at primary level, because one of the things that teachers are going to need to do, because there is a lot in the curriculum, is where they can find correspondences, say, between geography and science, so that they're not so that they can teach these things as efficiently as possible.
This phrase, knowledge rich, I mean, what does it actually mean?
That's such a good question. I'm really glad you asked. So it means more than just a lot of content, although there is a fair bit of content there. It means, you know, that it's carefully selected to be representative of a subject or discipline, that it's sequenced really carefully. It's knowledge that is related to other knowledge, so that when children learn it, and this is an important cognitive principle, it's built on what they already know. So for that reason, when you look at the early year levels, often you will see things like starting with their family history, for example, and then building up knowledge about the past from there.
So what do you think of the reaction? I mean, widespread criticism.
Well, I'm not sure how widespread it is. There's certainly some people who are unhappy. I suspect that it isn't a majority of teachers or principals, but certainly there's a lot of noise generated by some.
Why do you say you don't think it's widespread? Have you had some positive feedback?
Well, I've talked to a lot of principals myself. I've been around the country over the last weeks and months and had a lot of conversations, and a lot of principals are very supportive and certainly think that something like this is urgently needed. I do think there's legitimate worry about the pace of change and the extent to which teachers are going to have to shift their practice, and they're going to need support to do that. So I understand that side of the worry, and it needs to be backed with the right resources. And I do have a lot of sympathy for the fact that the change is taking place quickly. But then again, every year that goes by without something like this, we're selling short another year of children.
So are you saying that you think it should be slowed down then?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it needs to have the right support so that it will be implemented with fidelity. And also, as Minister Stanford has said, it's not going to be perfect on day one. No one is expecting that. It will take time for teachers to find their feet with it.
Can I read out something? I think it was in the Post over the weekend, but it's kind of a reflection of what people have been saying since last week when the draft curriculum was released. This is Porirua Primary School Principal Linda Knight de Blois, and she said that after delving into the curriculum, she called it a joke. She pointed out that the science curriculum for years 1 to 10, which referenced 82 scientists, only 3 Māori, 3 New Zealand European, none from the Pacific, and 75 European, predominantly dead white men. That's quoting her. Mm-hmm. Then goes on to say that in the Year 4 Social Sciences curriculum, of 81 learning objectives, 25 were about ancient Greece and Rome and none about the Pacific. And then the history curriculum from Year 1 did include New Zealand history, including Māori, as tangata whenua. But she's been quite specific there and pretty critical. How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I'd say that, you know, 3 out of 80 isn't bad when you consider that science has a long history. It's an international discipline. Look, what the scientists that have been called out in that curriculum are the ones that made the great discoveries of the past. And, you know, some New Zealanders and Māori are included. But in the end, that's a universal discipline. So it's got to be situated as the discipline of science requires.
There is quite a lot of concern, though, isn't there, about the New Zealand history element, that it's not getting the same prominence.
Well, I think it was out of balance before. Obviously, it's important, very important, essential for our young people to learn a bit about the history of their own country. And I think it actually the new curriculum does that better in the sense that it grounds it in the international history. So it starts with early Polynesian migration, for example. That's quite early on in the sequence. And then, of course, there is the history of Europe and other parts of the world where many people came from to live in New Zealand. So, and look, our young people aren't just all going to stay in New Zealand. They go out into the world. New Zealand is situated in an international context. We sell our young people very much short if we think that just teaching them about New Zealand is enough. It's required, but it's not enough.
So do you feel that this curriculum will address some of these major concerns about our education at the moment, such as inequities and the lottery of going to one school over another, poor standards, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at our international data, not only have we been declining relative to other countries and against ourselves for some time in many international measures, tragically, we also have some of the largest gaps in educational attainment. And so we know that a knowledge-rich curriculum will address those equity issues. And the reasons that it will do that is, first of all, it sets expectations for every young person in the country is entitled to be taught. And secondly, it connects up the knowledge when it's taught so that they form, you know, to use a slightly technical term, really well-ordered cognitive schema. So that's like how knowledge is organized in long-term memory so that it can be used to support things like critical thinking and creativity and problem solving. So knowledge is at the basis of all of these things. And it's one of the errors that's been made in the past sometimes with education is thinking that we can teach things like critical thinking and creativity in the abstract. We can't. Those things absolutely depend on knowledge. You can't be critical if you don't know anything about what you're being critical about. You can't be creative in a meaningful way if you don't have a great deal of knowledge. And I absolutely believe that having a knowledge-rich curriculum for all New Zealand children will help to address those equity issues.
How much do you think the debate, the discussion at the moment is politically driven? You know,
it's certainly politically driven. I mean, a curriculum is to some extent a political document. I mean, I'm more interested in it being a disciplinary document myself. I just want to see it represent the knowledge that is going to best serve the young people of this country to prosper, to participate in democracy, to have a voice in society. Those are the things that are important to me. But I'm sure that some of the players here are politically motivated. That's okay. That's part of democracy too.
Do you think that the criticism that we have heard is not a true reflection then of how people in the industry are feeling about it?
I don't think it is. I think that, I mean, the teachers' unions are, for example, engaged in a pay dispute with the government at the moment, and these things become political bargaining chips. There's all kinds of things that go on. And I also think there's some entrenched ideology that some people hold that is going to take a while to shift. And again, that's all right. They've got their views and their beliefs, and they're more than entitled to express them, and they should do so. It would be good if they'd stick to the issues rather than attacking people, which has sometimes happened, especially on social media. But, you know, that's part of it as well. It's all part of the cut and thrust. So I do think that a majority of principals and teachers, once they receive this document and start to use it, are going to find it really helpful.
The consultation will now run for 6 months, which is longer than usual, and the rollout will be phased in by 2028.